Hello?
Bruno, what's going on?
I'm doing all right, Adam. Not much. How are you doing?
I think you're doing better than me, given how the last couple days have gone.
You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
Yeah, it's, not what most of us expected here at Pounding the Rock. Certainly not myself. But yeah, we'll take it, close our eyes, grit our teeth and, hope for the best in game two.
It's always great when both like Spurs fans and Nuggets fans expect Denver to win and then the Spurs win. So Denver gets to be let down and the Spurs fans get to be extra excited, for the surprise victory. But, yeah, I thought it was a pretty fun game. I was talking to Matt Moore yesterday on the show, and it was weirdly like not too upset with the outcome, in part because I think it was just so interesting.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I guess on your side, you work for these shots. You swing the ball around, you make the right play, and a lot of the times it just didn't go down. You can't be too. It wasn't like mental mistakes a lot of the time for Denver that doomed them.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you. So we'll get to that in a bit. But the voice you are hearing is none other than Bruno Passos from PoundingTheRock.com, the SB Nation sister site for the San Antonio Spurs. Did I get that right, by the way, Passos?
Passos is fine. Yeah, it's it's a Portuguese
name.
There's the overly fluent way to do it, but then there's I think the more natural English sounding way. So Passos is perfect. Yeah.
Well, I tried my best. You do have one of the best Twitter handles, Bounce Passos, which I think I don't know why I love that Twitter handle so much. But it'll be in the description of the show, so you can follow him. And Pounding the Rock, I would say one of the good ones. So definitely check them out if you are jonesing for more coverage and to kind of get more insight into what's going on with the series. Okay, so let's get into it. First thing I'm going to ask, my opinion, like my perspective of Spurs fans, first of all, there's been a lot of them in Denver. I think just because they're so popular and so they've been so good for so long that, the fan base has had a long life. So there's been a lot of people kind of still on the bandwagon. But I've got to say, I've never experienced the bad Spurs fan until this series. Denver Stiffs, we've been on a Mutombo-like block spree of banning people from Pounding the Rock, coming over to, for whatever reason, talk some trash. So
they're out there. Yeah, we sometimes kind of deal with them ourselves, as I guess most fan bases do, and just trying to keep people in check and all that. But no, they're certainly out there, and weird times like this and the sort of post-goal golden era is gonna really kind of make people a bit more neurotic than usual.
My favorite narrative that fans do as like sort of a troll on the internet is when they try to talk about how another fan base doesn't have like the grit, or because that's what they Denver media is being so positive of a loss, that's why Spurs have championships and not the, like, wait, what the Spurs fans are extra salty after losses, so that's why the championships. I don't know, might have had something to do with Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili, but I don't know, maybe it's the fan base, maybe we have a lot to learn.
Maybe that's the secret to five titles, it turns out.
So first question, going back to before the series began, were you rooting for the Nuggets? I mean, obviously I would say more so than the Rockets or Warriors, but Nuggets Portland, did you have a preference there?
I think I was probably leaning more towards Portland given the Nurkic injury. But it was also just a bit more of a long shot. So, in the calculations, it was kind of Denver, Houston, or Golden State. And, between those three, and it's no offense, not that I think you'd take it, but, Denver was the preferable matchup, I think, from the Spurs fans' point of view by far, just, given the relative newness to the playoffs for a lot of those guys, and just the matchups with the Rockets and the Warriors throughout the past few years have just been they've been really tough, especially for this Spurs team.
I think you would have to be an absolute crazy person to take offense to somebody saying, no, we would rather play you than the Warriors. Like if I took offense to that, I think I would probably not be, I would not have the job that I have. Did you, coming into the series, what was your prediction? I think I saw, did you have, the Nuggets winning the series?
I went Nuggets in seven, which just felt extremely safe and a total hedge, and just a bit takey as well, because I was just like, you know, every home team is going to win every game was my take. Uh-huh. And, you know, as unlikely as that still is over a seven game stretch, it seemed tough to imagine something like game one where a team would just, you know, not have enough shots fall like that and just cough one up that early.
So you kind of referenced it now a couple of times. Is that kind of how you would diagnose this game from Denver? Did it, when you were watching it, did it just feel like they missed everything they put up, especially from three?
It was at least the feel or the aesthetic of it. You know, I think that, you know, coaches like Pop kind of, they sense things out, and they probably had a bit more of a logic to the shots they were giving up and how they were forcing the passes to swing. But yeah, just from a viewer's point of view, you know, you saw a lot of good looks for Denver, and the oftentimes the right guys taking them, and routinely they were not going in. The Spurs were pulling down enough rebounds to turn those into stops, and that it really felt like a game that could have swung the other way if a few more of those had gone in, especially with how tough the Spurs were having it on their own offensive end.
I think there was a snowball effect in this game, because you start missing, and then you start missing like some of the easy ones, and then it just feels like you're missing everything. And then there was even, I just went back and watched this game for a third time as I'm getting ready to write a column for tomorrow. And there were so many plays where like the ball just bounced through a Denver player's hands, or, you know, loose ball they kick instead of pick up or something. And it's like, man, sometimes there's just that snowball effect where when nothing's going right, then you start to, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that everything will start being bad and not go your ways. And I think that kind of happened to Denver a little bit. Here's the million-dollar question that everybody in Denver has been talking about for 3 days. And by the way, having 3 days off between these games have been the worst thing for Denver Nuggets fans that have waited 6 years for playoffs, and now we've like assessed and reassessed every angle of this. But did you think, from watching it, as somebody that doesn't watch Nikola Jokic every single game, did you feel like he was being too passive in this game?
No, I wouldn't say so. I'd say he was obviously seeing a lot of pressure from seemed like different angles. And, you know, rather than, I think passive is somebody who just does these kickouts that result in sort of empty possessions. But, you know, a lot of the time, I don't remember how many assists he had on the night, but he was turning a lot of these into sort of immediate baskets, you know, at the rim or open looks for his teammates. So passive in the sense of passing, sure. But, you know, I'm not sure what other choice he had. And he turned those into important possessions a lot of the time.
Yeah. Well, let's take our first break here. But when we get back, the main thing I want to ask Bruno is in segment two is I want to ask if the Spurs played their best game, or where that on the spectrum that game one falls for the Spurs, and which players played above their head or below. But first, I want to tell you about Wyze, the $20 camera that gives you video images in 1080p, full HD, so clear you won't miss a thing, night vision, two-way audio, and great visibility with a wide amount of angles. This is the video camera that for just $20 comes in a 1-inch by 1-inch cube. You can take anywhere. You can mount in your house. It's got a magnetic strip on it. You can put it on anything metal. And you can put these all over your house and be able to stream video straight to your phone, so you can monitor your house when you're not there, monitor the kids' bedrooms when they're up there sleeping or playing, whatever it is. These things are incredible, and it's just, what's insane is that they are only $20. What's cool about Wyze, they also give you free rolling 14-day cloud storage, so you can rewind your video up to 14 days. So if you're out away for a weekend, something goes missing, you can rewind the camera 14 days worth and see what was going on while you were gone. This is an incredible deal. And the best part, we have our own promo code. Go to wyze.com, wyze.com/locked, and you'll make sure you get the best deal on all of their products. $20 for the 1-inch by 1-inch by 1-inch video cube. But then they've got a whole host of other products, including, you know, some accessories and things like that. So check them out. Really cool cameras and a really cool price. All right, I'm back here with Bruno Passos from Pounding the Rock. You can check out their site for all of the Spurs angled coverage. They have a really, really good blog over there. So the big thing I've been trying to figure out, Denver, I know where this game falls on their spectrum. I thought their defense was phenomenal. I thought the intensity of everything they did was appropriate. They just missed shots. So I don't want to give this game too poor of a grade for Denver. It's probably like a B minus game because of the shooting, but there was a lot of stuff they did well that they could regress on. From San Antonio's perspective, how would you grade this? Where does this fall on the spectrum between best and worst Spurs games?
There's definitely been better games this year, even with it kind of being a down year, especially with how effective the offense has been throughout. So something like a B, you know, maybe given that they did hold the team to 96 points, which is very good for this year, maybe a B plus just with the defense pushing it up. But the offense on a good night, the Spurs offense, you see, it starts inside and they're able to establish that presence with LaMarcus, with DeMar penetrating, Rudy Gay as well. And it all sort of the plays all stem from that. And it results in not only shots at the basket, but a lot of kickouts from within the paint to open looks for three. It felt like offensively the Nuggets did a really good job of turning them into more of a jump shooting team than they like to be, which is obviously a bit weird with them being so such a good 3-point shooting team in limited volume. Yeah. But they really are an inside out team, and if they weren't, I wouldn't say that they established their edge inside as much as they'd like. But overall, yeah, a B plus. Good effort, scheme well executed on the defensive end, and that's again probably, you know, the best possible outcome for a game one on the road against a team like Denver.
I'm curious to see how that battle inside goes, because LaMarcus Aldridge is great and he can hit that fall away jumper, but I thought Jokic, I've said this for years and I've taken a lot of flack for it. I think he's a really, really, really good defender in almost every single aspect except for one, the spread pick and roll, which the Spurs don't do. He's not going to be put in position to, I think, get exploited there. But as far as like guarding guys in the post, I love the way he guarded LaMarcus Aldridge. I don't know that it was like, oh, Aldridge had an off night. I think it was he was forced away from the spots on the court he was trying to get to. But at the same time, he hits a couple of those fallaways, and then the defense kind of has to change a little bit. Do you think, from what you watched, do you feel like he was disrupted, or do you feel like he was just off?
I think he's one of those types of bodies that can make things tough for LaMarcus. These kind of heavier guys that still yeah. have a good amount of reach to them are smart when it comes to not biting on his feints, and he can't really go through their strong side shoulder and do that kind of step through move to right. towards the middle of the paint.
Yep.
There's a lot of things I think Jokic, just by being smart and big, and along with getting some help from his teammates, that can be enough to make it a long night for LaMarcus. So he looked good, and the Spurs didn't do much, as you said, to really get him in space and exploit that foot speed with a ball handler. So a really good job for him against a guy who's had a really good season overall in Aldridge.
I think Aldridge, he'll probably have one, maybe two really big games, maybe more. I mean, if he has three or four, then the Spurs are winning the series. But I think Jokic could probably keep him in check, along with the double teams you referenced. DeMar is the guy who I thought Will Barton did a phenomenal job on him, and I'm not convinced Barton's going to have like four or five more repeat performances of that. So DeRozan is the guy to me that I think is more likely to have like a huge bounce back game. Do you feel the same way? And just what do you think about how Denver was able to contain him?
He should. And I think, again, Denver played DeRozan really well. You know, Barton's a good guy for him because he's long, but he can also stick with him.
Yeah.
And you know, people who can, I think DeRozan, as much as Aldridge, if teams bring a little bit enough physicality in the paint to where it forces the refs to either not call it or not call it, and then it can be a real frustrating experience for someone like DeRozan, and then the shots stop falling, and it's like you said, a snowball effect with Denver. You really see nights like that with DeRozan where he starts pressing a bit too much, then he starts forcing passes or just really trying to force his shot a bit too much, and it can get difficult. But You know, he should have better nights. I think he was 6 for 17 or something like that from the field, still found a way to be effective with rebounding and passing, but he should have better nights scoring. But I think game plan wise and matchup wise, Denver has a pretty good setup with Barton and the other wings like Harris, Beasley, whoever else they want to throw his way. It's tough for all 30, however many minutes that DeRozan's going to play each night.
Yeah. So both teams, I think, did a good job of, you know, cutting off the head of the snake in terms of scoring. Both DeMar and LaMarcus, I think Denver will live with their production. San Antonio probably live with Jokic's production as a scorer. But the other guys for Denver obviously just did not make anything. And for the Spurs, the rest, the others besides besides Poeltl, all, and I'm throwing Poeltl in here because he took a three-pointer. It must have been a heave or something. I don't remember him shooting one.
It was, I believe, yeah.
Okay, so Poeltl, Aldridge, and DeRozan, outside those three guys, everybody else shot 7 of 12 from the three-point line, which is fantastic for your role players. Do you think – I'm bunching a bunch of guys in together, but collectively, where do you think the rest of the team kind of performed? Because it seemed like they were all right on point.
Yeah, I mean, I think they came ready for the attention that was going to be going to the volume scorers' ways and DeRozan and Aldridge. So Forbes has been as constant of a role player as you could imagine, both on the road and at home. He gets those open looks, shoulders squared. He's just got this sort of action figure like form to him, and every shot is exactly the same, and he shoots it with confidence, and he's just been spectacular. And then Derek White was another kind of key guy.
Is he always this good? Derek White was incredible. He was by far the best guard on the court, I thought, for most of the game.
He's really come into his own. You know, he's had better games than that. I think he had 3 or 4 turnovers, which is a bit high for him. But he's really been sort of just a Swiss Army knife for the Spurs on offense. He's been willing to work as a secondary playmaker, just sort of a game manager, and obviously on the defensive end, he's extremely good at being that point of attack defender to take on the primary assignment. But he came ready. I was at the Spurs last practice on Friday, and White's this big sort of film study guy. So I asked him just kind of, how do you approach a series like this? Do you sort of study yourself, scout yourself, and see what teams are going to take away? He sort of reeled it back a bit and talked about how he doesn't look at himself, but he looks at how the Nuggets have defended Aldridge and DeRozan throughout the season, and take little pieces from that, because his role really is playing off of those guys, supporting them, and you saw him sort of serve as the primary kickout and secondary creator and penetrator, working off of Aldridge and DeRozan a lot. And I think you're going to see a lot of that as the series goes on, because White as a primary creator, I don't think we're at the point to sort of gauge it, but as a secondary guy attacking defenses with the shot clock winding down, he knows exactly what to do. He can drive. He can pull up from mid-range extremely well, and I think he's really important to the Spurs' offensive game plan.
You mentioned the secondary playmaking. Knowing the difference between being primary and secondary playmaker, and kind of like knowing when to pick your spots, is such a huge skill. And I kind of agree with you. He wasn't dribbling up the court and trying to break guys down. He, you know, get the ball where it's supposed to go, kind of read the court. And then I'm guessing on his film study of how they were guarding Aldridge and maybe some of the weaknesses, one of the things he probably saw was the way Denver closes out, and in particular guys like Malik Beasley and Jamal Murray. He ran them, or they, you know, would run him off the light, quote unquote, but in such a way that he kind of anticipated, blew past them, and got into the paint so many times. And there was just a lot of kickouts with him on the run attacking the paint. And those two players in particular, Murray and Malik Beasley, both were just so far behind on a lot of those. So I believe it about him being a film study guy. He played a very, very smart game in game one. Let me do this one, and then we'll go to another break. But the Nuggets will win this series if, what do they have to do? What do they have to do to win this one?
Making shots is a good start.
is it as simple as that? If the game plan is the exact same?
Don't expect the Spurs to blank you. Like they're gonna have to pick their poisons with a younger team that can whip the ball around, that has just a great creator that's gonna just the breakdowns are a part of the Spurs game plan. They know they're gonna happen, and they know they're having to pick their poison. And it's just, it may be a bit of an arbitrary random thing as to who the ball swings to, and that guy just being prepared to make the shots. And Denver's youth and experience may play into whether that happens or not. But there's nothing to say that those guys can't rise to the occasion and kind of do what they've been doing for all season.
Yeah. All right, let's take another break, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to have a little bit of fun. I'm going to poke a little fun at Bruno and some of the Spurs mystique here when we get back. All right, Bruno. So are you going to be at games 3 and 4? Are you in San Antonio?
I am, and yeah, I'll be at both those games.
Oh, fantastic! Well, then I will see you at those, because I will be there as well. But I'm excited because I've never been to AT&T Center. That's what it's called, right? AT&T Center.
Yes.
Okay, I've never been, but I do know that the Spurs, as honorable as they are, do have a tendency to have some funny stuff happen in playoff games. So we're going to close this segment out by you telling me what I can expect at the AT&T Center and kind of give me some odds on the following things. Are you game?
Yeah, go for it.
What are the odds that a bat flies around the court and causes a delay?
Ooh. So not as high as it is to, if you look up at the rafters, for you to see them just kind of flying around and kind of considering whether they're going to dip. But
it's crazy that this is a thing. They just live inside the arena and everyone just is like, oh, that's fine. There's bats up there.
Yeah, as soon as they got the first one, there were four, I think, the first game, so I knew that there was at least three still lurking, unless they found them. But so let's go. I'll go 10-1 on that one.
Can you not catch these? Is there not like a spray or I don't know, something?
Pre-game, I've seen them do some interesting things. One, they kind of had what looked like a badminton net at one point pre-game, and the bats were kind of flying around court level, basketball height, and they weren't able to take one down. They've, I think, contracted a few local pest control companies for solutions, but no, it's still in play. I think I watched one as recently as I think the Kings game, which was just earlier this month. So still in play.
Yikes.
10-1 on the bats.
What kind of bats are we talking about? Are these giant bats, little bats? They're rabid bats?
I think they're called, Mexican free tail bats.
Oh, this is great insight here. This is what you get on the Locked On Nuggets podcast. The Mexican free tail bats. Okay.
So I knew this already, but Chris Herring at 538 did a really good in-depth piece on it recently that kind of goes into all the details. There's a cave, I'm not sure, maybe 150 miles from San Antonio that has 1.5 million of these.
Oh.
So they're pretty common in the wider area. And yeah, like Austin is known for like the bat colonies.
Right,
so
yeah.
They're common. They're not very big. They're bats, so you're going to see this flying rat and you're not going to feel too comfortable.
I'm already uncomfortable just thinking about it. Like the media seats are up top. I'm going to be terrified the entire night. I'm going to be completely thrown off my game.
And you're tall, so you know that they're going to go for your head more than some.
Tall. Yeah. That's funny. All right, give me the odds that the hot water in the visiting locker room just stops working coincidentally on the night of the game.
If it's a 1-1 series, a bit higher, you know, Spurs might need a little bit something on their side. Which game was that in where that happened?
I don't know. I just know that these things have tend to happen, with the Spurs. So I think you're right. 1-1 series. I don't even know if they would do it for game 3. I think game 4, if it's 2-1 Denver, then we're definitely getting the hot water's definitely broken for that one. Shoot around, practice, everything.
Weird things will happen.
What about the AC breaking?
Oh, you know, temperatures are starting to get hotter here, so I think the ACs are starting to get broken in. But those unit like that at the 18th, anything can happen. I think higher of a chance than the bats. Let's go. We'll go 9-2.
Okay, 9-2. Wow. Yeah. Do you buy into the? So the, you know, I always just assume. Look. the AC broke. It's just whatever. We know LeBron had the cramps. How diabolical would it be? But the one thing that changed my mind on it, Amin El-Hassan said he was covering the series at the time, and his quote was, "Hey, it was a brisk 68 degrees inside of the Spurs' locker room." He said, so take that for what you will. Where do you stand on AC Gate from that 2014 finals?
I don't know. I feel like I could get my credentials revoked just for pondering this question.
This is great. Oh man! All right, so no comments.
Maybe that answers the question in itself.
Nice. Okay, last one here for you. A snake, a possum, or an armadillo roaming the visiting locker room? Give me the odds on that one.
Snake, a possum, or an armadillo.
I just assume San Antonio is chock full of armadillo. I don't think I've ever seen one in real life, but I just assume San Antonio has them running around everywhere.
You see more dead ones on the side of the road than anything.
Lovely.
Just as you do with the possums. So snake, seeing as how I've seen probably more of them in the wild, is a likelier choice. But I feel like guys like Jokic could just kind of, you know, take to that pretty comfortably. I could definitely see Jokic just being, you know, friend of all snakes and having it slither up his, you know, around his neck or whatever, and just chill for a bit.
He is a man. He is an animal person. So I think snake and armadillo for sure. Bat and possum. I don't know if there's anybody that likes possums or bats. Possums, first of all, this is going to be sad. A possum's like a giant, kind of like weasel looking thing, right? It's kind of disgusting.
They're heinous looking.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think anybody's going to pet a possum, but an armadillo, that might be a distraction because Jokic would be following around the arena all pregame. So
they are rabid though, or they can be, right?
Armadillos?
I think armadillos can carry rabies. Am I wrong in thinking that?
You might have just saved me from my first trip to AT&T when I'm petting the armadillos outside. So thank you for this heads up. I thought they were just cuddly little like turtles.
I could get be wrong and get fat checked and just sound like an idiot right now. But you know, that's I'm gonna lock that in and say that armadillos can carry rabies.
The rabid armadillos of San Antonio. And then as far as crowds go, I hear the San Antonio crowd can be a pretty intimidating one. What's your read on the situation, especially for a first home playoff game?
It should be a good one. Yeah, we've had some pretty intense nights here this season with you know, Manu night and some very sort of playoff atmosphere games. But you know, this is after last year's sort of fatalistic series against the Warriors, this is one that the fans should get you know, feel a bit more competitive. There's sort of blood in the water already, so I'd expect a pretty amped crowd on Thursday.
I can't wait to see how. I hope Denver wins game two, because if they go down 0-2. It's not that the series won't be interesting. It just will kind of be, I don't think it'll be in doubt anymore. I don't think Denver can come back from 0-2, especially losing 2 at home. So 1-1, I think there's still plenty of storylines, plenty in doubt for the series. But if Denver drops tomorrow, I think the series becomes significantly less interesting for everyone.
Yeah, you have a point, I guess.
Do you have an updated prediction now that San Antonio won game one?
Oh, I'm not going to jinx it. I'm just going to ride Denver in seven. Yeah, and then just I'll take the heat for it when if things do end up differently.
Bruno, thanks so much for coming on, man. This was this was fun, and now I know what I need to know about armadillos. So thank you very much.
Yes, sir, yeah. Yeah, I look forward to seeing you in person in a few days.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. You guys could check him out, Pounding the Rock. You could follow him at Bounce Passos. It's in the description of this show. And everybody else, we will have another episode tomorrow following Game 2 between the Spurs and the Nuggets. We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.